everything that we do every day, we want to be a champion.
Get your mind right and let's go. Do the little things. Win every day.
It's the sole place to play football.
Everything with an attitude.
Alabama, yes.
I don't give a shit who we're playing.
Dominate the guy you're playing against and make his ass quit. That's our framework. That's our MO with the team.
Richardson breaks free on the sideline. End zone.
This is a mauling, folks, a mauling.
Hear the tide, honey badger.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Tom, is Alabama immune to the forces of nature? As the college football landscape crumbles all around it, yawn, Alabama turns in another record-setting performance.
Man, we are just at a level above everybody else. It's like Gary Danielson said a few weeks ago, there's Alabama and there's everybody else. And as you said, as we were talking after the, you know, after the game was over, I mean, how in years past we'd have been so excited, right, about drubbing Mississippi State like this. But this was like, you know, as you said, this is probably the most boring 48-point margin of victory that I can remember in several years.
I hate to say that because it's such a spoiled sentiment, right?
We sound like spoiled. We're that spoiled fan now. No, man. We said a few weeks ago, get ready for Atlanta. Get ready for the playoffs. This team has a lot of maturity. It has a lot of leadership. And, man, they are – they're still hungry. The biggest thing I can say that I'm excited about is unlike 2010, when we sat there and watched them lose to South Carolina that they should have never lost, this team wouldn't have lost to South Carolina at South Carolina in 2010. He has figured out how to push this team's buttons to still be hungry and to play the next play. And a lot of programs just can't say that.
No, it's absolutely true. I mean, we saw a lot of this in 2015. And I think we're seeing more of it, even more of it this year. And it is a testament to, you know, sort of building your program. And, you know, you can bring in a lot of talent and you can sort of accrue talent. But to build that leadership, that top down within the team leadership that sort of rolls over year, it takes even a little bit longer. And so 2010, that may have been one of our more talented teams, especially at the skill positions. And the leadership that last year and this year that those teams exhibit is just off the charts, you know, something else. I saw a stat or heard a stat and I've heard two different versions of it. So depending upon, you know, which one is more accurate than the other, it has been either 15 or 17, you know, call it 16. It's been over 15 years since Alabama has scored a touchdown in the first quarter of the game following the LSU game. And so you think of a big rivalry game that is LSU and sort of the complacency that you may have after winning that game, that you go out the next week and you can't score a touchdown in the first quarter. And, you know, Alabama hangs 10 in the first quarter, 30 in the first half. And, Tom, how many times have we gone? Have we struggled to make the 11 o'clock kickoff? And we've seen some of the worst Alabama football ever during those 11 o'clock kickoff times. And this Alabama team came out ready to play and just put a monster performance on for such an early game. And, you know, that's sort of been a bugaboo with this. I say not this team, but just the program historically. Those are just trademarks of this Saban team.
No, they are, man. And just like they talked about on air during the game, you know, Jonathan Allen, you know, was exerting his leadership to the players and saying, make sure everybody's in bed by 8:30 on Friday night.
Right.
Because we got a 6:45, you know, wake up call on Saturday morning. And it's little things like that, but you know, it's also because he's getting the depth because of all the years of great recruiting classes that you've got guys like Tim Williams and Ryan Anderson, who in years past under Saban, they would have left early regardless of their evaluations. But now, in my opinion, there's been several years of, you know, guys going to the pros and here's what their draft grades were and here's how they ended up playing out, et cetera, that guys like Ryan Anderson and Tim Williams last year, who could have easily been drafted, was like, you know, we don't have a first round grade. We're going to come back, man. where would this defense be right this second without Tim Williams and Ryan Anderson? Take nothing away from Jonathan Allen. But right now, if you didn't have Tim Williams and Ryan Anderson, Jonathan Allen would not be able to play down low like we talked about. He would not have been able to push into the middle. We wouldn't have him in the middle to help Daron Payne and Dalvin Tomlinson. And we wouldn't have their pass rush on the outside. And this would be a totally different team. And these are two unheralded backup players last year who are now studs. And it just goes back to the rich getting richer. And he's able to reload because of guys like that.
Yeah, I agree. There's all sorts of – this team is interesting. Every team is sort of interesting in their own right. This team is definitely interesting, you know, for those little narratives. I mean, you know, it wouldn't be hard to pick five guys off this team that could have gone pro last year, and no one would be disappointed if they had. You know, you could add Eddie and Reuben Foster and OJ, you know, to the mix, and no one would be disappointed that – I mean, disappointment is maybe not the right word, but no one would think that they were making the wrong decision or making a bad decision if they had all gone and they all came back. And so that's just a testament to this program and the leadership and just the truth that Saban, you know, speaks to those guys about come back, improve your draft status. And he talked about, you know, Reggie Ragland was a guy last year. He would have been a fourth or fifth. Came back and, you know, and he was late first, early second. And Reuben Foster is the poster child of that. He would have been a second or third last year, and he may be a top eight pick. And Jonathan Allen, not dissimilar. He was a second or third. He may be a top five pick. And that's pretty impressive. And you think about coming back for a year and getting that kind of bump in your draft status is, you know, an innumerable number of dollars. You know, you've set another generation of your family by coming back and making that decision. Let's talk about this game. We could theorize on, you know, just all the intricacies and all the cool sort of facets of the Saban program. But this, let's talk about this offensive performance against Mississippi State. What stood out to you?
Well, you know, I know the headline is, you know, Jalen Hurts, you know, was able to be the first quarterback to rush for 100 yards and throw for 300 yards as an Alabama quarterback. And, you know, congratulations to him that he was able to do that. But not to regurgitate last week's podcast, you know, it was kind of more the same for me, you know, in the shotgun, in the pistol. You know, one of the beat writers for Alabama went back and broke down his 347 yards, and he counted how many of those jet sweeps that they call a pass. You know, thank you, Ardarius Stewart, for your 67-yard pass that I literally almost handed you the ball in the backfield. And they counted the screens, and they counted the plays behind the line of scrimmage. And of his 347 yards, 160 of them, roughly half, came behind the line of scrimmage. And so, you know how I feel about that. This Lane Kiffin has decided that he is going to get the ball to his playmakers on the outside at or behind the line of scrimmage. And against this team, it was obviously way more successful than it was against the athletes of LSU.
Oh, sure, sure. Mississippi State, you know, they couldn't. You know, couldn't hang with that. You know, I saw that same article and I thought, well, you know, somebody's trying to make a name for themselves by, you know, just being a contrarian, and that's okay. And, you know, all of those facts are true, but equally as true as it's never been done before. And to put those stats out there is to minimize it. To put those stats out there to minimize it is to suggest that it's easy. If it were easy, this would not be the first time in the history of the program that it's ever happened. So, you know, both things can't be true. It can't be easy, and it can't be the first time that it's ever happened. So I'm gonna give, you know, credit, I think, where it's due, and I'm going to salute the performance.
Wait a minute now. It's the first time it was done, but when he hands the ball in front of him pitches the ball in the air to Ardarius Stewart, and Ardarius Stewart, by his pure athleticism, rushes for 67 yards, and that's counted as a pass. You know, I mean, you got to factor that in. I mean, did he rush for 100 yards? Sure, he did. Is it his fault that they count that play that shouldn't have been counted as a pass a pass? No, it's not his fault. But it's okay to point it out, because to say he got 347 yards like your typical drop back passer that throws the pitches the ball all around the field, that he didn't do is all I'm saying.
That's fine, but you know, again, to minimize it is to suggest that it's easy, and it's not, or it would happen, you know, more often. Is it conventional? No, but define conventional in college football anymore. That whole nature of the game is changing and evolving, and if we don't change with it, then you know we're going to suffer the fate of LSU. We're going to suffer the fate of Les Miles, right? Where there was no growth and evolution, and you know we can either evolve with the game and continue to dominate it, or you know we can get lost to the passage of time. And so I'd rather continue to evolve and grow and you know be the number one team in the country and sort of explore you know new opportunities to be dominant. What really stood out to me was, you know, obviously Jalen's performance in 28 of 37 passing, you know, 76%, you know, four touchdowns. Some of those were conventional drop back passes. Some of those did demonstrate his arm. And so I don't mind there being a healthy mix. I don't mind taking a game like this. And we've talked about, wouldn't it be neat if the coaching staff would, you know, just take advantage of this depleted secondary and just make this a passing game so that we can work on our passing game. And we all, you know, kind of, we talk about that stuff and we have for years and we say, oh, well, we'll never do that because you have to go out and kind of play the game. Well, no, Lane Kiffin said we need to work on it. So we're going to work on it. And so we made a point of this being a passing game. It's like the old Tecmo Bowl where for kicks, you know, we're just going to pass the ball every play and develop skills in that area. And so I don't mind that happening. I don't mind, you know, take the basketball analogy of let's get a couple easy shots underneath to build our confidence, you know, over the flow of the game. So, you know, it's hard sometimes to remember that Jalen's still a true freshman, but I don't mind giving him some easy layup opportunities so that he can build his confidence. And I wouldn't mind, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw some of that this coming week. I just think it's part of how we're developing this quarterback, and I'm not categorically opposed to it.
No, I'm not saying I'm opposed to it. I just have to call it for what it is. And so this is a quarterback that still struggles mightily to throw the ball down the field. I will acknowledge that they gave him a few more attempts in the intermediate, and so he was able to connect on a couple intermediate passes. But he missed a lot. I mean, last week on the podcast, we talked about we left points on the board. Well, we didn't leave points on the board because the Bulldogs were pathetic. But, you know, there were plays early in this game where he missed reads that where guys were open. So early in the game, he had Dieter open on a third and goal at the goal line. To the left side of the formation, he totally focused on the right side of the formation, decided to pull it down and run, and it was third and 10, and I don't know how he thought he was going to run. Okay, he thought he was going to run for a first down. He did not. We had to kick a field goal. Missed touchdown. Next series, he's got Ridley wide open down the left side of the field. He's looking to the right again. He totally misses him. Ridley's got his hand up about 25 yards down the field. There's nobody on him. He totally misses him. Okay. And so then when he tried to, you know, connect on his deep ball to our Darius Stewart, Saban says in his post game press conference that Stewart was supposed to basically come underneath the DB. Well, you know, I thought about that, man. Just last week against LSU, he was throwing the ball out pattern to our Darius Stewart. He threw the ball. And what did we say on the podcast last week? We said, we'll never know, right, whose fault it was. Was it our Darius or was it him? Well, ironically, it was the same receiver. The same thing happened. He threw the ball in a space right to a DB. Well, that's what he did in this game. So I guess based on Saban's post game, we should say our Darius has messed up 2 weeks in a row now and made Jalen Hurts look really bad on a really bad interception throw. I'm just saying that the progression I see is that they let him try some intermediate stuff this week. So the exciting thing for me is some of those 347 yards, he actually got to throw a nice pass on a nice play to Calvin Ridley for about 20 yards. He actually completed a few passes between 10 and 20 yards, which is a great thing because they just got to keep building on that. They've got to let this guy try to throw the ball down the field if he's ever going to get it done.
No, I understand. I just, you know, and I would encourage folks not to heap on, you know, and be negative towards the situation. I would say enjoy the ride and watch the development and understand what's happening. Understand that when Ardarius, you know, sort of breaks off the route and, you know, and there were, you know, he talked about it, Saban talked about it in his interview and Ardarius did too. You know, Saban said, you know, he was really supposed to break under, and that's what Ardarius said, the same thing that he and Jalen talked about it. And Ardarius said, hey, when I'm even, I'm going, I've beat him. I'm not going to duck back underneath if I've already beat him. And that can be okay too. That can be a fair adjustment on the fly. And that's something, you know, give me a sophomore, junior, senior quarterback that's worked with the receivers X number of additional years. And they're on that page. They're at that sort of graduate level of improvisation while the route's open that maybe a freshman isn't, because he's just sort of, you know, coloring by numbers. You know, give me some of the backside open receivers when the quarterback's only focusing on the half the field. Well, let him have the opportunity to scan the whole field. You still have to run, you know, even if you're giving Jalen only half the field, you still have to run plays to the other side because you still have to keep the defense honest. And so at what point does he start to, hey, let's look at that third receiver. Hey, let's go across the field for that next read. Those are things that are going to happen. It's not that, oh, if we let him develop. No, this is part of the development. And so I say enjoy the ride because these things are going to start clicking and it's going to be fun to have seen, oh, yeah, now we're turning that page and we haven't turned that page all season, but here we did today.
Well, obviously I want to enjoy the ride and obviously I'm happy that, you know, that we're dominating like we are, like I had said weeks ago in, you know, first couple of podcasts.
Sure.
I'm just saying that why people listen to this show is for us to call it as we see it. And so today you and I cannot say they're only giving him a part of the field to look at because we unfortunately don't know. We would like to go spend the night at the complex and wake up in the closet and hear all this crap, but they won't let us do it because they'll arrest our ass. But we don't know what the truth is. And so right this second, are they giving him the opportunity to look at the whole field? And is he just not doing it? That's what I'm pointing out. Obviously today, in my opinion, the biggest thing that has worked for him is his athleticism. Okay.
Right.
He has an offensive coordinator that does a phenomenal job of putting him in plays that he can be successful. They're not asking him to audible at the line of scrimmage. They're not asking him to change the plays. And the other thing Kiffin's doing, which you in the past have not enjoyed the Julio Jones of the world running the ball. So I don't know if you were cringing when Stewart scored his 67 yard or not, right? Because we don't need him to blow a knee. But this coordinator seems content on doing a lot of that line of scrimmage stuff with his star wide receivers that I just don't want something to happen to him.
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think that, and I'm a little bit selective on this, and I've kind of, you know, I've kind of talked to this a little bit too, that, you know, you take your franchise, you're truly your franchise wide receiver, and in that category, I would put, you know, a Calvin Ridley, a Julio, an Amari, those type of guys, especially a Ridley, because he's the smallest of those three. I really don't like those guys on an end around. Now, you could reason that, you know, hey, our Darius Stewart is knocking on that level of capability, and I wouldn't disagree with that. I think he's put together a little sturdier, a little more sturdy. And so him doing that, I probably feel less bad about, then it probably bothers me less than some of the other guys. But, you know, it's not an invalid point. I mean, if he were to get hurt on that kind of play, then, you know, that would be the kind of thing that I don't appreciate. But I like him. I like Ardarius. I don't mind Ardarius being utilized in that way. And I know that sounds a little contradictory, and I don't intend it that way. I just think there's some guys that can do that better than others. You know, Amari always looked sort of long and lanky doing that. And, you know, Ridley just looked small and slight doing it. And frankly, Julio was, I mean, can we say he was the only receiver of much merit that we had on the team? I mean, the separation between Julio and the rest of the receivers, I'm not trying to disparage anyone, but the separation there was pretty significant. And so, you know, sure. He was. And so I think it, you know, am I sort of picking and choosing a case by case? Maybe a little bit I am, but, you know, I always said, hey, DeAndre White, I don't mind doing that because he's a little more sturdier. Christian Jones, I don't mind him doing that because he's a little sturdier. And so, you know, is that a double standard? I don't intend it that way, but, you know, you could look at it from a perspective and accuse me of that. And, it'd be hard for me to protest too much.
No, I'm with you. I'm just, what happened when Stewart got hurt earlier this year? Did the offense take a setback? We did, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a drop off when Stewart was not in there, from his leadership, from his blocking, from all the intangibles he brings to the game. So I guess I just want to see some more, 10 to 12 to 15 yard passes to Ardarius Stewart and let him beat a guy one-on-one, then have him run through all that traffic. That's all I'm saying.
And that's fine. And he did catch, I'll put words in your mouth. He did catch two legitimate touchdown passes.
Yes, he did. He did. I just, all the sweeps and stuff, just give it to the running backs. That's all I'm saying. Now, interestingly enough, for the listeners, you know, when Saban does his little weekly football show with Chris Stewart, and he highlighted a play, he highlighted the 67-yard run by Ardarius Stewart on the TV show. And he talked about that when they set up that formation, and he gave Lane Kiffin all the credit, that they had four wideouts and they had O.J. Howard and they were in an empty and they had no running backs. And that he talked about, you know, the defense is thinking, you know, we got to adjust to this. This is an empty formation. And he talked about, you know, why didn't Lane Kiffin motion Ardarius Stewart from the slot on the right side back into the shotgun next to Hurts prior to the play snapping?
Sure.
And he talked about the fact that they did that on purpose, or Lane Kiffin does that on purpose, where when he sends him in motion, if the safety is 15 yards off the ball, which he was, and he's slow to react to have to come from the right side of the field all the way to the line of scrimmage on the left side of the field, it creates an opportunity in the blocking assignments. And so he purely did it, right, to create the additional opportunity in space for Ardarius versus putting him in the backfield. And it was a way to get a jet sweep action with a running back, a wide receiver, instead of a running back. I get all that. I just don't like Stewart being the one doing it. Right. It was interesting that when Saban showed the play on his TV show, sure enough, the safety came over, but he was slow to react. And by the time he reacted, he was 20 yards away from the play, and he was a non-factor, so he didn't even have to get blocked on the play, right? So all that, I give Lane Kiffin credit. We got lots of wide receivers, man. We can put somebody else in that position.
Okay, fair enough. What else on offense stood out to you?
This guy named Kervin playing right guard.
Let's talk about that.
I had to I was like, wait a minute, 78. What's he doing at guard? And so it was so interesting after the game and the post game when they were asking Saban about it. You know, he clearly talked about that Cotton had been in a black jersey all week apparently, and that he had not gotten any reps. And then on his coach's show last Thursday, he even went as far as to say that they felt like Kervin might have become one of their top five linemen. I'm like, where the hell did this talk come from?
Right.
So I had never heard Saban, Kervin, and you're one of my top five guys, all in the same grammatical sentence before ever.
No, and not all kind of broken out that way. You know, right? Kervin's a senior. He's a kid from Virginia. He came in as a defensive tackle and a couple of years ago was moved to the offensive line. And he's seen spot duty, but certainly I think Saturday was his second start, second career start. But he has seen spot duty, and he's the kind of guy that it just seems like maybe he's you know, kept chopping wood, and he's developed and has an opportunity maybe to see some playing time, you know, between now and sort of the end of the season. But I'm glad you mentioned Kervin, because I've got him in my notes to talk about. I want to poke at that. You know, I want to kind of draw back on that and poke at that a little bit, because Kervin played, but he rotated with Josh Kasher at the position. And they did that because Lester Cotton couldn't go, and Lester Cotton has sort of been subbing and filling in for Alphonse Taylor. So, Tom, when's the last time we've gone four deep at a position?
Man, there's been years past where if we had to bring in somebody in the two deep, the next play the quarterback was sacked, and the next play the quarterback was sacked, and it was an obvious letdown in the game. And Lester Cotton, correct me if I'm wrong, he came into the game on extra points and field goals.
Yes, he was cleared to play, but you know, due to limited practice and other guys stepping up, right? I mean, how many times have we seen somebody, oh, thank God he's cleared to practice. I don't care that, or he's cleared to play. I don't care that he hasn't practiced all week, because he's still the best we've got. And let's put him out there and let's hope that he can, you know, baling wire and duct tape, we can keep him, you know, healthy, you know, for the course of the game. And then we'll kind of figure it out next week. What a position of luxury to say, you know what, let's hold him back. We'll rotate him in with the two deep, which we did. He came back in with the second string. Let's rotate him out. We'll use him on special teams, and we'll just be careful and slow with bringing him back. What a luxury that is.
No, it is. But as you look at the two depth chart, if you look at the two, you know, the two deep on their roster, though, they're in a little bit of a dicey situation, because Lester Cotton was running with the twos when Alphonse Taylor was out there, right? Mm-hmm. And so Lester Cotton gets banged up. Alphonse Taylor is still banged up. Well, suddenly, both of your backup guards are not there, and the only other person you've got to go is Dallas Warmack and Brandon Kennedy, a redshirt freshman. So I was surprised that we didn't see Dallas Warmack versus Kervin. However, Kervin is a, you know, he's a fifth year senior, and, you know, Saban can make some of those. I think it was more spin. Okay. I think Saban was more, you know, building Kervin up, and Kervin does have some experience of being over there on the offensive side of the line longer than, you know, Dallas Warmack and Brandon Kendi and those kind of guys. And so I think Kervin was called to duty because they didn't have any choices. I mean, Alphonse Taylor, you know, Alphonse Taylor did a radio interview in the past week and with some outlet, and said that he had suffered multiple concussions over the years and his playing at all in the future is in doubt.
Right.
I had not heard that. And so suddenly, if that's true and Lester Cotton's in a black jersey all week and you're the coaching staff, you got to go to a fifth year senior and say, hey man, we need you. Can you run right guard?
Yeah. And I think there's a little bit of luxury there. You know, like I said, this was Kervin's second start. He's actually started at left tackle. And so, you know, he has some athleticism. And he was a former defensive lineman. So, you know, he has some athleticism. He seems like a guy that maybe we've groomed over the course of the season. And, you know, fortunately this is week 10 instead of week two, right? That he's had some grooming throughout the season. There's been a number of weeks span here where we've known that Alphonse can't go, and it's been week to week, but here's another week that he can't go. So, you know, Corin, we're going to give you some more work. And so it just, and and Leicester has performed well. And so fortunately it's the fourth or fifth week that Leicester was going to be the starter as opposed to the second week. Right. And so all of these sort of things have kind of broken the right way for Corin to be ready. And then I think the coaching staff, you know, sort of see those, you know, sort of saw those, that connective tissue and said, well, let's get Josh Casher some reps too, because you know, if we're going to put our swing man in here, then we're going to need someone else, and let's get Casher some reps. And so it's the kind of thing that, you know, the further down you go, there's more questions about who, you know, who coulda, woulda, shoulda. You know, think about the situation where maybe Bozeman was going to be the swing guy, but you know, he stepped in at center and has performed admirably there. And so if you were to forecast the line, you know, back in August, there are a number of things that have sort of unfolded that we wouldn't have necessarily pegged. I mean, I think we pegged a lot of them, but we didn't peg all of them. And we certainly wouldn't have pegged, you know, Kervin and Casher, you know, starting and rotating in for a game like this. But it at some level, and you know, this could be an obvious statement, right? But gosh, at some level, doesn't it feel really good to be able to in effect go four deep at a position in a game that we win 51-3, and frankly, no one's the wiser?
No, there's a lot of fans that have no idea that Kervin was in the game at right guard.
Right.
And much less to win 51-3. As I said earlier, you know, we've had years past where we've had a big SEC game. We've had a guy go down, and it's totally just threw off the whole rest of the game.
Yeah.
Much less be able to kind of run on autopilot like this.
What else on offense did you see?
You know, I really enjoyed watching O.J. Howard, and I just focused on him a lot in this game and his development as a blocker.
Yep.
You know, he hasn't put on a ton of additional weight. I mean, he, you know, the roster still has him at 251 pounds, but is he where Michael was for us before, as far as what he brought Michael Williams as far as to that position? No. But has he just made huge strides? He has. Yeah. And they're asking him to line up in numerous positions in the backfield and in the line of scrimmage and in the slot, and still be a blocking tight end predominantly, when he had, you know, two big plays in the national championship game that won that game for us. And I just really appreciate, you know, what he's doing for this program, and without a fullback, you know, that gets plays in this offensive scheme, you know, while the wide receivers do a great job blocking, OJ Howard, you just how many different formations he has to understand, and pre-snap reads and motion before the play, and there's a lot of things they put on his shoulders.
There absolutely is. And for as much as this, you know, may sound like hollow talk, it's not. There's a reality that says opposing defensive coordinators have to account for him. They have to. And so even if he only gets three balls in any given day, that does not mean that the defensive coordinator did not have to prep for the potential that OJ Howard has. And if they have to allocate sort of resources, prep time, and then resources in the game where someone has to cover, has to watch, then they're taking away those resources from other opportunities that they have to prepare and execute the game. And so it's that intricate web of, you know, especially when we play teams that we are athletically superior than they are, and then we're able to spread them thin because you don't know where we can attack, and we can attack from so many different levels. I mean, there are plays happening that, and this is the kind of thing you'd have to really, you know, sit down with defensive coordinators and understand the scheme that they're running, and then sort of break down sort of play by play by play by play. But there are plays happening all over the field that are strung together, you know, dots connected to how the defense is having to defend OJ Howard, who's really not even in on the play. And there's just a reality to that that makes this team that much more aggressive and that much more dangerous.
Well, we spoke about this a few weeks ago when they were running three or four plays or three or four potential plays off of each play.
Right.
They're not having to learn new things because they're doing the same actions every time. But it is putting so much more pressure on the defense because you're having to account for all the skill players. And then, oh, by the way, now they have a running quarterback. Really? And so a few years ago when Blake Sims was there, they didn't have the – I guess this is an indirect way that we are getting to see the fruits of having all the skill players.
Yes.
Because what we would typically expect to see is just pitching the ball all over the field, down the field, right, to our talented wide receivers. Well, it's almost like Lane Kiffin is saying, well, you know, I'm just still hesitant to put the ball down the field, and when I do, bad things happen. And so I'm just going to develop all these different plays off of each play. You're going to have to account for all these skill guys. And, oh, by the way, now I got a running quarterback. And so when Blake Sims was doing it, they didn't have as many skill players as they do now.
Right.
And so it's really making them defend the entire field.
It really is. And what's funny is, and, you know, I'll kind of poke at us a little bit. You know, if you go back, you know, because we've been doing this how many years now, if you go back and listen, you know, to some of those older shows, we talk about the offense has the opportunity to be dynamic and multiple, and we can all of the do all of those different things. Tommy, we didn't know what multiple was.
No, not in this way. You're correct. And it was nice to see OJ, you know, get six balls in this game. I wish Ridley would have gotten some more. I wish he would have saw Ridley on that touchdown play. You know, it was nice he got his easy touchdown on a pick play that didn't get called. But no, what else jumped out at you on offense real quick? Where it was nice to see Jacobs with that, you know, 45-yard run in the third quarter. It was nice to see with only two healthy running backs, him have a big day.
Yeah, it really was. And that kind of underscored the intention to pass the ball. Some of it was, you know, sort of dinged up running backs, and some of it was, you know, the opportunity to work on Jalen, manufacture some running from really receivers, and we talked about that. But it was good to see Josh, you know, Jacobs, you know, 9 for 90 is a really nice, you know, stat line. You'd like to see it over 100 with with the touchdown, but, you know, understanding what we were trying to do, it was good to see him bounce back. Because he's had a couple of games where he wasn't contributing, wasn't participating at maybe the level that he had been sort of midseason. So it was good to see him come back and show those flashes again. Again, it's just another weapon that's in the arsenal. So that was certainly fun to see. And I like seeing Miller Forrestall more and more. He is getting an increased role in the game, and we're seeing more of him in there. And, you know, he had 3 catches for 19. You know, poor Hale Hennigus is getting squeezed out.
That, man, I mean, because I'm sorry, Hale provided a lot of good blocking.
Sure.
And Hale was a very valuable component to this team. Why do you think he's getting squeezed out by the true freshman?
I just think, you know, I don't know. I think it's athleticism. I think it's getting, you know, I think maybe Miller has more upside as a receiving tight end. And so we're trying to develop and sort of bring him along. I mean, the story of Hale, it hasn't been completely written. You know, he performed very well for us last year. I suspect that we're going to see him contribute more, if not this season, the balance of this season, which I wouldn't write that out yet. But, you know, I think, you know, definitely, and no one's suggesting this, but, you know, his career is not over. The story of Hale still is to be written. So, but I just think Miller has just come on in a way that has maybe been a little bit surprising. And so what's interesting is you think about next season with, you know, OJ's definitely going to be gone next season. Well, both Hale and Miller may have an opportunity to blossom more so next year with OJ and OJ's sort of reputation not on the field.
Well, it does make you wonder, though, what you said about Miller. Is Miller, because of his does he just have more receiving prowess than Hale does? And that's why the door has been cracked open for him. And maybe Lane Kiffin just desired to have a second tight end option that he could go to, And maybe they just felt like Miller, you know, was showing more of that than Hale.
Right. That's the direction that I would go. But, you know, like I said, I think they're both going to have an opportunity, you know, in subsequent seasons to flourish. Well, what else on offense, or you want to go to mini game ball?
No, I was going to ask you the same question, man. I think we can go to mini game balls. Give me yours so I don't steal yours.
You know, I'm going, and we talked about the position, so I won't really add much to it. But I'm going Corrin and Casher, you know, the three and four guards stepping in and playing, and the team really not missing a beat.
Okay. Well, I am going to give my nod to Cam Sims.
Okay.
It was nice to see him third on the receiving chart with three catches for 45 yards.
Yep.
You know, this guy, obviously, had he not gone down, people wouldn't have known who Calvin Ridley was. And we haven't had to rely on him right this second, but we are going to need him next year when Stewart and Howard step away. And I hope Sims is coming on.
Yeah, I do too. It's good to see him back, and he had a couple of nice catches. You know, we had six guys with multiple catches, which was nice, and, you know, spreading the ball around a little bit. And Cam Sims is certainly a guy that has a lot of athletic upside. So look forward to him continuing to sort of get healthy and play himself back, and look forward to him making a contribution. I think the balance of this season, but again, I think the brightest days for Cam Sims are ahead.
No, absolutely, man. We'll flip the field on defense. What jumped out at you on defense?
I just think the team effort. You know, there were nine players with four or more tackles. There were 13 players, you know, with three or more tackles. There were nine players with quarterback hurries. And so, you know, you can call out a sack. You can call out a pick. I get it. But there wasn't just a dominating guy that sort of ruled the defense. It was a true on defensive effort across the board. It would be hard to say, you know, who was the defensive star in this game, because they just played so well as a cohesive unit. I really enjoyed seeing that.
You know, I agree, and it was interesting. Saban talked about in his post-game press conference of how good of a job they had done against the running prowess of Nick Fitzgerald. And, you know, he made an interesting comment. He was talking about, you know, our defense sees this in practice every day. And I'm going to give you the analogy of Mississippi State, their defense – sees it in practice every day, right? Against Fitzgerald. Our defense sees it in practice every day against Jalen Hurts. The difference is Mississippi State doesn't have the horses on defense that we do.
Right.
And so I really think that what Jalen Hurts has brought to the offense this year was really huge against a quarterback like Nick Fitzgerald, because he had one nice 22-yard run there in the third quarter. But this is a guy who, what was it, 270, 80 yards rushing in the last game. For this guy to only have 11 rushes for 40 yards was a big deal.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what do we kid, you know, a couple of years ago when, you know, Johnny Manziel just would, you know, he would sort of eat our lunch. And, you know, we said, you know, Saban needs to hire him after he flames out of the NFL. We need to hire him as sort of like the permanent scout team quarterback, you know, just to give us looks. And so, you know, and that was kind of a funny thing, but there's a reality that, you know, sort of iron sharpens iron, that, you know, let's get, you know, an athletic mobile quarterback, you know, like a Jalen, that can come in and give our defense looks, but then he's honing his skills against our defense, which makes him better on offense. And so it is, you know, you think about all the talent, all the, you know, kind of five stars, all of the amassed ability, you know, kind of on the team. And then they're going to go out and practice against one another and get better against the best. And so it's almost a snowball effect.
It's not fair to the other teams. It's absolutely not fair to the other teams. And, you know, in a fun way, right?
And recruited to it and all of that. But there is a reality that, you know, there's some snowball effect going on that makes it increasingly difficult to be able to come and play ball with us.
No, this is true. Well, the next thing I want to touch on for a minute is I just want to, you know, I'm going to give my mini game ball away early. And so I'll just say his name later, but you know, one of the other big things that jumped out at me because this was an overall defensive effort, was the play of Anthony Averett. You know, I'm always screaming, you know, at the games about DBs turning back to the ball and, you know, you got to turn back to the ball so pass interference doesn't get called, et cetera. And there were three different times that he turned back at the very right second and put his hand up, and he didn't knock the ball away all three times. He just got in the field of vision of the wide receiver to keep him from catching the ball because they couldn't call pass interference because he was turned the right way. This is the best game, in my opinion, of his young career as a starting cornerback. And while he's made other plays, I think this was the best game he's had as an Alabama cornerback.
Without question. Without question. From soup to nuts. You know, like you said, he's made plays, but in terms of stringing it together into a full game, hats off. You know, Averett had a phenomenal day on Saturday.
Because he's getting picked on, right? Because he's still getting picked on a ton, right? And so that's the biggest thing for me.
Right.
Is teams are picking on him and I think he's getting better because of it.
Yeah. What do you think about Tony Brown? How's he looking at the inside position?
You know, the verdict is still out there. There was a huge play in the first quarter, I believe, where Nick Fitzgerald, there was a huge play in the first quarter where Tony Brown, it was a zone coverage. Tony Brown came off of his wide receiver. Thank goodness the defensive line hit Fitzgerald right as he was releasing the ball. And so he wasn't able to get the ball there. It would have been a touchdown. Tony Brown made some plays, but that was a big play that could have gone the other way early in the game. I don't think it would have affected the outcome of the game, obviously. And so, you know, he's a guy that is doing well considering he's just started being back in the rotation. But there's still work to be done.
There is, and I'm fine with that, and I don't dispute that a bit. I think there were a number of plays that you know, Mississippi State left on the field. They could have caught a number of passes, and I say a number, I mean, you know, three, four, five, you know, passes where the receivers just dropped the ball or just couldn't complete the catch. You know, it would not have changed the outcome of the game, but it would have given them, you know, 7 or 10 more points on the board, and they would have been at least a little bit more competitive. But, you know, at the same time, I take nothing away from the defensive backs, and I like the way, you know, and Tony, like you said, he's sort of new to the rotation, and he had to miss some games this year and sort of forced into primetime action with Eddie being lost. But I like the athleticism that he brings to the field. I think there's a net. I want to be careful because I'm not trading on my Eddie Jackson, but there's a net athleticism boost when you bring Tony in for an Eddie, and then you slide Minka back, you know, into the safety position. I mean, you've got four true corners on the field and a nickel, and then gosh, I really like Ronnie Harrison in there as well. I like that alignment. I just think let's give Tony a little more time, and he's going to be that much better, improved. I'd always rather have Eddie, don't get me wrong, but I think that, and again, it kind of goes back to the riches of, right? Because what do? Literally, we put in a five-star corner, you know, one of the one or two ranked corners in the country. We were able to rotate in for, you know, Eddie being lost. And so it's fun to see that. And so it's fun to see it kind of come together and to think about, you know, is there a potential that the secondary is actually more athletic when you lose a starter? And then, you know, to try to wrap your head around that for a minute is, that must be very frustrating for other fan bases.
No, it has to be. And what you just said, most teams would have brought in a guy like, you know, Levi Wallace.
Sure.
And no offense to him, but most teams, that would have been their next man up. And the other teams would have been, we have somebody to pick on now.
Yeah.
And so for Alabama to do that, you know, is just a luxury that other programs don't have.
Right, right. You know, I got to give a shout out to Deron Payne. There was a point, you know, in the third quarter where Mississippi State was stringing together a couple of running plays, and you know, lo and behold, you know, it's Josh Frazier in the middle of the defensive front, and so who do we see trot back out? You know, Deron Payne, and then next thing you know, Mississippi State's punting. So I just thought, you know, we just needed to put that stopper back in the bathtub, and so we did. And then all of a sudden, you know, State can't do anything. They have to punt. I just got a kick out of that.
That just speaks to what we've said before, right?
It does. And to see it happen is almost like, oh man, this stuff writes itself, right? And, you know, it's almost like it can't be that easy that he just brings them in. But yeah, okay, I guess it is. And I hate to sound like that's disparaging against Frazier, because I'm glad that he's getting some reps. I'm glad he's, you know, in the rotation. Which it's just hopefully he is appreciating that he needs to take that step, and hopefully that's going to be motivating to his development, because we need it.
That shows you, as we identified at the beginning of the season, you know, there's the Trojan horse, right, for this Alabama right. defense.
Yeah.
Well, and by the same token, I just want to quickly point out, you know, the first sack of the game by Tim Williams, because on that key third and sixth play to kind of get things started on the right, you know, on the right course for Alabama, you know, the left tackle has been watching lots of film of Tim Williams, right?
Sure.
I couldn't get over the fact that on that play, Tim Williams takes the edge on him. And he just kind of half-ass pushes him out. And I'm sitting here thinking, dude, you don't think he's fast enough to turn the corner by you just pushed him over there 3 yards? He's not going to be able to get to your quarterback? I just couldn't get over the fact that a starting left tackle in the SEC on the very first third and, you know, obvious passing third down play of the game just kind of half pushes, you know, a guy like Tim Williams a couple yards wide and thinks it's going to do anything.
Do you think that
hilarious?
No, I hear what you're saying. Do you think that, and I'm not making excuses for Mississippi State linemen, I'm just asking a question. Do you think that there is a realization that over the course of the day, you're not going to beat him? But we have a quarterback that's somewhat mobile, and so force him wide, that will give our mobile quarterback another second to sort of see it, perceive it, and react. And he'll have more time to react if Tim Williams has to go wide as opposed to cutting inside.
In theory, that's probably what he was coached up to do. And so, obviously, they only had 3 sacks on the day, and so that ended up being Tim Williams', you know, only sack on the day. Yeah. And so I guess if they had 10 sacks on the day, it probably would have been a bigger point to make. I just found it humorous that they approached it that way, but that's probably why they did. What do you think of Mr. Davis, you know, scoring a sack in the ball game?
Yeah, it was nice to see. I enjoyed that. He, we're looking for help on the inside. We need it. And, you know, he's a guy that I was hoping would be a more steady rotation guy by now, but I'll take it. And it's good to see it sort of blossom in this type of game. And I hope that, you know, that's a springboard of things to come, because guess what? That number two spot, we talked about going 4 deep at left guard. Holy cow. We can't go 2 deep at nose, right?
That is correct.
Competition for nose is open.
Wide open. Yes. We're about to have competitions on the quad next week. That is correct.
Well, that one would be a harder one to, you know, because God only makes so many of those. You know,
this is true.
We don't have 1,000 high school soccer players, you know, that can come in and do that.
You know, real quick, you mentioned the luxury of Tony Brown. I also want to mention the same thing is true for Rashawn Evans.
Yeah.
Who, you know, is able to just float in the game in the first half of these games, like all rested and he hasn't really had to do anything. And so he comes in on a handful of third down plays and, oh, let me just, you know, pressure the quarterback like I do. And I'm all rested and I can just come in and I'd be like a starting linebacker on other SEC teams.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And there's a number of players that you could say that about, you know, a Deshaun Hand and, you know, a Terrell Hall or an Anthony Jones.
Hey, man, we saw some more Hand in this game earlier.
Yeah.
Why do you think that was? Where do you think he was in the LSU game? I know you said shrinking the roster, but he's a guy that really blossomed against Watson in the national championship game. I'm surprised that we didn't see him earlier against LSU, but yet we saw him very early in the first quarter of this ball game.
Well, and I wonder for a little bit if you didn't kind of partially answer that question unintentionally, you know, the role that he played in shadowing Watson is a role that was not required against LSU, but it was a role that we could leverage against a Mississippi State.
No, that's true. That's true. But he still could have provided depth on other plays for the line. And I guess like we talked about LSU, we didn't – fortunately, we got off the field a lot, which probably dictated some of that.
Yeah.
Anything else you saw? Because obviously we got to see Anthony Jennings pretty early in this game, which was nice. We got to see some Dakota ball. We got to see a lot of backups. Any backups that jumped out at you real quick? You know, that you enjoyed seeing. We got to see some Mac Williams in the game beside Rashawn Evans in the inside of the nickel formation, which was interesting.
Yeah, it's good to see him get some run.
Besides fullback.
besides fullback and special teams maven. So, you know, it's definitely good to see that. It's always fun to see the young guys and kind of spot, you know, or try to spot and anticipate who's going to kind of be the next one. I'll be honest with you. There's so many right now that I think have the opportunity to really be that next guy. That it's almost disingenuous to start listing them all because it just sounds like you're making it up. But I think that, you know, I think he has an opportunity to be that guy. I still am very impressed with Jennings. I know you like Terrell Hall in the same way. I think those are three cats that really have an opportunity to be special over the coming years.
Well, give me your mini game ball on defense, man. Who you giving it to?
Yeah, I this may be a short trip on mini game ball. I'm going Anthony Averett for
reasons we've discussed. Man, you cannot do mine, man. They can't do that, dude. That's just wrong. All right. Well, I will. I'll give it to Raquan Davis then for his sack since you stole my guy. So that's all okay. Good. So give me special teams. I found it very interesting what Saban said. He was asked about, you know, special teams and he was asked specifically about, you know, how things went on the day, you know, from a field goal perspective. And so he was asked about Adam Griffith and his three field goals. And I found it very interesting that he talked about how, you know, he commented that we just have to keep him on point with, you know, doing things. I mean, I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, you know, on his stance and his placement of his foot and his technique. And I kind of got the sense in his comment to the reporter that we just have to keep focusing on his confidence and building his confidence. And, you know, maybe I read too much into this, you know, minute answer from him after the game, but, you know, there might be more to this just helping Adam with his psyche than maybe we kind of realized.
Yeah, I definitely think there is something to it. You know, Saban also talked about, you know, some of his kicks were a little low to the ground. And so, you know, you take all that, you know, together and you wonder if there's not, you know, some mechanic, you know, issue with mechanics. I thought it was interesting that, you know, in a game like this, that, you know, Adam was 3 for 3 on his field goals. Including hitting a 39. And so gosh, man, it's the kind of thing I hate to say, but you wonder if the pressure doesn't get to him a little bit, because there are, you know, take the LSU game where points are a premium and you miss a kick. And there are other games where early in the game, it's a missed kick. And then you come back after the offense has scored a couple of touchdowns and, you know, oh, okay, now we don't need these 3 points, but here they are. I so hate to sort of think and say that out loud, but it just, that's what it feels like sitting in the stands watching it. I don't know what your thought is.
I think it must be a psyche thing based on Saban's remarks. And the fact that Adam Griffith was trotted out there to take all three of these field goals in the game tells me that it was something about building his confidence. Because you talk about going four deep at right guard. Well, what should you typically be able to do in a blowout game that you didn't expect to be a blowout against an SEC caliber opponent, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It'd have been a great chance to bring somebody else out there to, you know, the backup kicker to take one of these kicks. Well, I don't think they did it because to make every field goal Adam can make. And I think they feel like he needs that for him.
Right. Right.
And so I just hope that this margin of victory continues because, to your point, I don't want us to be in many more 10-0 games and have to, you know, line up for 45 yards and see what happens.
Right. Right. Although speaking of, you know, lining up and see what happens, I love watching JK, you know, kick the ball. I mean,
three punts for an average
of 50. Really?
Yeah, go ahead. Now, I was about to say what you're about to say. Three punts for what?
Well, three for 51, and dude had a 62-yarder. And I will say this. I think the fans appreciate the punting game in a way that they have not before. Because when he boomed that 62-yarder, the moonshot, just you could just hear the collective gasp, the collective awe in the stadium of that kick. And you know, Saban talks about winning the field position and all these sort of nuancy things that people don't maybe even try to want to understand. But to see a 62-yard kick sort of unfurled, that's pretty exciting. And I enjoyed that. Unfortunately, that's the one that went for the touchback. But man, that kick in the air was something else.
Well, and you and I both know that, you know, the way they grade this, right? It was 62 yards from the line of scrimmage, but I had to go back and count, you know, how many yards it was from where it actually left his foot.
Yes.
That was about an 80-yard punt, dude.
Yes.
It only got 62 yards on the stats, but that was about an 80-yard punt.
And that thing just kept going up and up, and just it was a thing of beauty to sort of just see it, to see it happen. It was really nice. And you juxtapose that to the Mississippi State kicker. There were a couple times he did not even kick for a first down. It was just, you know, they go out of bounds and you know, the official is running up and keeps running up and keeps running up. It's like, well, where is he going to stop? And there were a couple times he was inside what would have been the first down mark for that punt. And you think, boy, that's just a really bad punt. And so to get to see JK do that is just, boy, that's what punting's all about.
No, it was. And to put that in perspective, their punter had 7 punts for 210 yards.
Yes.
And JK had 3 punts for 154 yards.
Yes.
Now, something I did not realize before the game, though, is apparently they had lost their kicker to an injury before this game. I don't know if it was the last game or a previous game, but they talked about how their starting kicker was also their starting punter. And he also was their kickoff guy.
Okay. And
he also was the placeholder on their field goals. So their kickoff guy was serving 3 roles on their team. And kind of like Michael Williams in days past for us, they had to bring 3 new specialists into the game to make up for what he did before.
Well, that certainly explains
the punter.
Think about it.
They also talked about the missed field goal they had. The guy didn't get the threads around on the field goal. And guess what? He was a new placeholder on the field goals.
Yeah.
That's just interesting. We talk about our embarrassment of riches, and here they've got their guy who kicks their field goals, excuse me, who's holding for the field goals, who's their kickoff guy, and he's their punter. And when they lose him, they got to replace him with three other guys.
Yeah. He's like their all special teams guy.
We should give him a mini game ball just for that. So,
man.
Well, tell me, what do you think? What do you think going forward here? Obviously, it helps that the Georgia Bulldogs took care of Auburn for us to just kind of lower that pitch and hearing all that crap about Auburn for the next 2 weeks. But what do you think about this next game as we get ready for the Chattanooga Mocs?
Yeah, I think I just want to. You know, that Auburn game was certainly I enjoyed watching that. The fact that I think they gained 32 yards in the second half, it's just amazing. You know, that's a Kirby Smart defense, and you know, we know that a Kirby Smart defense is going to look a lot like a Saban defense, and so I kind of like that. I kind of like seeing some of that on film, and I get the biggest kick out of Mo Smith. Having the pick six that really separates, you know, the score in the game. So I like that Alabama's beating Auburn even when Alabama is not playing Auburn. I do enjoy that.
No, that is
petty of me. I'm sorry. I just
It is petty, but it's all good, man. So let's focus on the Mocs here, man. But I do like that it kind of got rid of the Auburn talk, right? We were starting to hear more and more about them, and we never want to hear about them. So it was kind of nice to put them in their place.
Yes,
I do think it will, and this team will not let it take their focus off Auburn, right? Because of all the things we talked about. So what do you expect for this, you know, this Chattanooga game? Because I don't think we're going to look past them, because this team is just not built that way. What do you think is going to happen when we have a 6 o'clock kickoff time?
You know, I don't know what to do with picking this game. I would be embarrassed to pick 51-3 against Chattanooga, and we'd just be Mississippi State.
You'd feel bad about that, right?
I would feel bad making that type of prediction, because that's a very bold prediction. 48 points is a bold prediction. And we beat an SEC team by that. An SEC team that is allegedly, you know, a strong, you know, considers himself a strong rival to Alabama. An SEC team that last year spent time ranked number one in the country. That's who these, you know, and so to think that, what then would you think that you should choose, you know, that you should score, you know, UT Chattanooga over? I don't know. You know, I look, and so for kicks, I looked at the schedule just a little bit, like, what are we even talking about here? And then I think I found my answer. The Moccasins and Mississippi State have a shared opponent, and that shared opponent is Samford. And the Moccasins beat them, both won. So the Moccasins won 41-21. And Mississippi State had a little bit of a more of a roller coaster ride with Samford, and they beat them 56-41. And so Mississippi State allowed Samford 41 points, and the Moccasins were able to hold them to 21. And so all of that goes into my calculus that I'm actually picking a score of 49-10. I think this game will be closer than the Mississippi State game.
Wow. Okay. Well, they talked about all the youth that Mississippi State has on their roster. And so I don't know how much experience Chattanooga has, but you know, last couple of years, this tune-up game for Auburn has not even been close. I mean, 2 years ago we beat the Catamounts 48-14, and last year, you know, we put away the Charleston Southern team 56-6. So, you know, this is going to be that game where, you know, we don't get over 50 because it'll tick Saban off. Although I do think he enjoyed putting over 50 on Mullen. It seemed like he didn't seem to be as upset about it as I expected. Right. I think this is going to be I think this is going to be a little bit less than that, which will be surprising. But kind of by the same tone, I think this is going to be like a 45-7 game.
Okay.
So we're going to walk away and we're going to be like, what the, you know, we're, you and I are going to be shocked after the game that the reality of it's a closer game than Mississippi State is, it, we're going to really scratch our head on this one.
Yeah. I've got it 49-10. So I'm kind of, we're kind of in the same ballpark on this one.
Would you like to see Cooper Bateman a little earlier in this game? I mean, I know we're just talking about embarrassment of riches, and I know he got to, you know, he got to complete four passes for 50 yards, and you know, he got to complete a 31-yard pass, but you know, I still say that this current team and the makeup of this current team, you know, there's a lot on this freshman's, you know, plate, and things can happen. Yeah. And so, you know, I'd like to see him play half of this ball game. I'd like to see him come in more. I mean, he literally came in the second to last series to, you know, to enter the game, and then the very next series, you know, Ronnie Clark rushes a couple times and runs the clock out. I think we got to see Cooper Bateman more than one series.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, obviously we're talking about it being a coach's decision, not a forced situation, but I would love, you know, coach's decision, the opportunity to see Bateman play most of the second half, you know, some with the starters and then some with the backups. And I, you know, look, I'm writing a script here, so I'd like to see him be productive in that time as well. So, it'll be interesting to see if that plays out, but that's what I would wish. And if that can be done, you know, sort of in the context of the score that we're saying, you know, 49-10, 45-7, you know, maybe the Mocs don't score their points until late. And so they're scoring against backups, and sort of backups against backups after the game's kind of already determined. And, you know, and we've had a chance to play some of our backups, and especially Bateman. And, you know, maybe that means somebody like a Josh Jacobs has a really big day in you know, kind of running the ball in his capacity. So those are the kinds of things that I would really script out that I would like to see.
I just wanted to bring it up real quick just because, you know, given how this game unfolded, it would have been nice to maybe see him just a little bit earlier. But, well, tell me, do we have any listener feedback after the last show?
Yeah, we've got a lot of feedback, and it says Tommy sucks.
Well, thank you. This has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast.
No. We actually got some awesome feedback, and we got some awesome feedback. We got actually 4 5-star reviews in the last week, which is awesome and certainly flattering. And I'll kind of hit some of this.
Now, wait a minute, man. If we got 4 of those, you should spread these out. Just do 1 today. And that'll carry us for the next month. That'll be good.
No, I'm going to put these out there because I want more folks to sort of jump in. But I'll hit these kind of quickly. But we appreciate every one of these. Listener by the sort of username of Wallpaper Obsession gives us 5 stars. A must for every Bama fan. This podcast is truly outstanding. Always love looking. Forward to listening every week. I'm going to paraphrase here. He gets insights from the games. He said he likes ESPN, but the analysis there is pretty tired. Detailed insight that we bring to all 3 facets of the game. He says it's a must listen for all Bama fans. We've got SRD Neil 55, essential for Bama fans. This is simply a fantastic podcast. For Alabama fans, lives in Kentucky, starved for Bama analysis. While the team gets a lot of coverage, he likes the way that we're real comprehensive with our discussion. This podcast is from an intelligent fan's perspective, so he really appreciates what I've got to say and doesn't succumb to homerism. It offers a realistic look at his favorite team with a perfect amount of optimism and pessimism. So we appreciate that. I've got one I'm going to circle back to. The Standard. This is the Texan Stone. That sounds real official. The Standard in Alabama podcasting. Wow, I'll look forward to this show every week. Such a such in-depth coverage of Alabama football, where ESPN and other outlets glance over Bama due to no story or whatever. These guys bring the coverage of Alabama. A huge roll tide to this show. Keep it up. And I think the winner of this sort of week's this week's feedback report is AIPWNS, Informative Football Podcast. Great commentary and analysis of the Tide's players and performance week for week. Must listen if you're a Bama fan or serious about football. Only a few requests, guys. And he says, explain, this is awesome, explain some of the terms for us dumber fans. I cannot for the life of me find how a rabbit nickel defense differs from a standard nickel. And that just, that's the winner just right there. And then he talks about more breakdown of Bama's packages used game to game. Let us know how many plays we ran out of each defensive package, or, and it looks like it gets cut off there. Man, I wish that we had like an advanced stats package, and or at least the time to sort of create one myself of the number of plays out of different formations and to break that down a little bit different. But I'll tell you about the rabbit nickel, because we all know that I love the rabbit nickel. The nickel is just the same five defensive backs, but it's what you put that on top of. It's like wearing a long sleeve shirt with pants or shorts. You've got a long sleeve shirt on, that's your nickel, but what are you putting that on top of? And so the rabbit nickel is putting it on rabbit rushers. And so instead of just like a standard, 3-4, which was a nickel, so it would be more of a 3-3, then you're really bringing it against like a 4-2, where you've got two additional edge rushers. You've got maybe it's Ryan Anderson, maybe it's Tim Williams, maybe it's Terrell, maybe it's Anfernee, but you're rushing, you're putting a rush package in underneath or on top of underneath the nickel, as opposed to more of a standard run defense over a nickel. So he asked,
I can see why that was your, we appreciate all the feedback, but I can see as soon as the words rabbit nickel came across the screen, you were focused on,
I lit up
answering that question.
Yes. Well, I lit up twice, because when I saw four, I was like, holy cow. Thank you guys. That's so, it is encouraging. We do really appreciate it. And then when I saw the rabbit nickel, I was like, oh, I'm going to have fun with this one.
No, guys, we do appreciate you listening, and we know our show runs long, and that's because we really enjoy talking about this stuff. And so please keep giving us the feedback, because it will only make us better. And we do this because we have a passion for doing it, and hearing that y'all like it just makes us want to keep doing it. So we appreciate the feedback.
Absolutely. Thank you very much for that. And if you're not big on iTunes, but you'll still listen to us, then leave us some reviews on the Bama Hammer. Let our editors know that that you like and appreciate us. But with that, this has been another edition of the Alabama Football Podcast. Roll Tide.
Thanks for listening to the Alabama Football Podcast. We love that you're tuned in and hope that you enjoyed the show. We encourage you to reach out and let us know what you like, where we can improve, or just a shout out, a Roll Tide. We are where you are. iTunes, Facebook, Twitter, email newsletters, t-shirts, free roster downloads, and of course, on the web at alabamafootballpodcast.com. Check us out, where you'll find easy links to your favorite way to follow the Tide. Got that, Coach?
Aye.
Of course, Roll Tide.